Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
The standards department is telling me you can only say cat anus twice during the show, but I'm going to fight for you. You can say it three times. Cat anus, cat anus, cat anus.
So if I said cat anus again, that would be wrong. Well, good for us, because we're not talking about cat anuses at all. In fact, the amazing Claire Adams returns with more of her special brand of sex edge-ucation. This is part two of our chat, and we will be discussing a lot of things, including her bondage porn career. As you know, in this podcast series, we take a look at the world of fetish sex, kink, and alternative sexual lifestyles, and chat with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world. And no one fits this bill better than Claire. If you somehow missed part one of this insightful discussion, look for last week's podcast, number 153. Simply use my site's search function, type in podcast number 153. But don't forget the pound sign.
Well, the jerk store called, and they're running out of you.
That's very kind. For more of Claire, visit her on one of her professional websites, clairebondage.com or petitekink.com, or on her rope site, vintagerope.com. Her master, Damon Pierce, also has a site. That's slavetobondage.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by the ideal sponsor for this fetish and kink series, Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, fetish wear, and gear right there at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the My Stockroom tab.
You better not get in my face, because I'll drop that motherfucker.
Oh, hey, language, language. You'll enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun, and I might add, easy. Yes-a-ree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick up all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit My Stockroom today. You'll be so glad you did. Okay, on with the show. Welcome back, Claire, and thank you again for making this time to be together. I'm so glad that we have this opportunity to finish the conversation that we began last week. In the interim week, my mind has been exploding with other questions besides the ones that I had planned. But I'd like to pick up where we left off last time, and we were talking about your site,
petitekink.com.
Petitekink.com. And I was just going to ask you more questions about that. Your interaction with your clients really seems to push the envelope. The images on that site in particular show a whole lot more interaction with your clients than I've seen on any other professional DOMS site. Do you see this as an extension of the porn work that you do?
Well, one thing I would like to clarify is that specifically probably what you're drawing from is in my particular image gallery, there are quite a few pictures that I've taken from shoots that I've done professionally, of course, posted with permission. You're seeing shoots that I've done on set for particular companies for femdom male submission.
Right.
The reason why they are on there is to illustrate my range of abilities in what can be captured on camera, obviously.
I got it. Right. Interesting, because here's a question that I've been thinking about since I saw those images, and now that you have clarified that they actually come from a different venue altogether than, you know, your practice as a professional dom, at least in your interaction with your clients. When I was doing, when I was shooting porn for my video production company, Daddy-O Productions, and this was, you know, like 5 or 6 years ago, and I know that there was an absolute restriction against any kind of penetration, and our stuff was all gay, so any kind of penetration in while somebody was bound or subdued. And there actually was a scene in one of our movies, our movie Men at Work, Men Hard at Work, and there was a scene about you know, this guy, and he had handcuffs on, and he was cuffed in front of him, and you know, he was being fucked by his lover. And it was very playful and very charming and very sweet, and there was no hint of anything, even a smacking of BDSM. But there were a lot of people who, distributors, who were fearful of carrying that or distributing that for fear that it would have crossed the line against this prohibition. Apparently, that prohibition has loosened some.
Yes and no. Uh-huh. There's currently someone going under indictment for distributing bondage porn across state boundaries to a different state that does not permit that type of porn.
I see.
And the internet world, which those images that you see depicted for distribution, was penetration with bondage where the male sub was being being penetrated consensually by me.
Right.
And it was all for internet distribution. It was not through video distribution. A lot of the video lines in the mainstream adult world cannot distribute that type of penetration. There are a lot of legality issues state by state.
Right.
And if you ship to the wrong state, you can be indicted, fined, and much worse can happen to your company.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of distribution is either carefully selected, they're very stringent about where they will and won't send things, or it has to be moderated to where it's shot soft core for the actual bondage penetration so that they can't determine or establish whether or not something actually was inserted, or again, distributed to states that accept that type of content.
So one avoids that, generally speaking, this legal gray area by providing like streaming and download to own kind of stuff as
Correct.
Opposed to hard copy. I got it. Good, good, good. That makes a great deal of sense. Good, good. Well, thank God for the internet.
Instant gratification.
Yes, exactly. Is what you've learned being a sub helpful in your role as a dom? We talked about this a little bit last week, but I would like to pick your brain a little bit more on this. Has your role as a sub enriched your role as a dom?
I would say absolutely. Not only does it provide practical real-life experience, I can empathize with if I'm on top with the submissive and if I'm on bottom with the dominant.
Right.
It increases the amount of psychological play. I can take the person further because I feel not only confident in my skills, I feel that I can relate to them in a consensual manner, openly, honestly, and with the practical knowledge of both the top and the bottom, push them harder.
Right.
Push them to where they want to go and where their limits are.
Yeah.
Should they want to do that?
Yeah. Because you have an intimate awareness of being on the receiving end.
Yeah. So not just 6 months, years.
Right. Exactly that.
This is a lifestyle, and the amount of information it takes for you to be appropriate and proficient is equivalent to a master's.
Right. Exactly that. So, and I'm gathering that the reverse is also true, that your role as a dom has enriched your life as a sub.
Yes, when you see someone, even in the porn world, where you engage in a BDSM activity that is genuinely submissive and has a slave heart or wants to go wherever you want to go, I'm very grateful and appreciative and in awe of their desire to trust and submit.
Mm-hmm. Again, a frame of reference from my own background in pornography as a producer and director and whatnot. One of the things that I was painfully aware of in the industry is that a good deal of the stuff that is captured and produced as porn is faked. Faked female ejaculations, faked cum shots, faked, the stunt dicks, fakes, whatever, a good portion of it is. I have a feeling that it's a little bit more difficult to fake a BDSM scene for porn. Is that right?
Yes and no. It would be challenging. It's not very challenging if they're doing... It's easy to fake pain mm-hmm. to the camera, but not to the person that is doing it to you.
Right.
Because I'm accustomed to reading people, I can genuinely understand if they are not in legitimate pain. And there are things based off of their communication. You can ham it up to the camera, but there is the core underlying exchange that's going on. Whether or not anyone chooses to acknowledge it, there is no running away from the person being in bondage, being helpless, submitting to me, going through an amazing experience. That's it's a lot different, not to denigrate a straight boy-girl or girl-girl scene, but the energy is trust-based.
Right.
And you do have to trust your partner in any environment, engagement,
right.
whatever
right.
sexual encounter you're going to have. But the
mm-hmm.
trust is much higher. The emotional vulnerability is much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is keyed up to a different level and a different way of interacting. And the way that I choose to interact with people, and again, this is with their fully informed consent, is to make it more like a real scene.
Right.
Not as in, I'm your mistress, get on your knees and kiss my feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's all well and good, but that's not necessarily the intentions behind the connection that I'm
right.
trying to achieve with the individual that I'm shooting with.
Right. So let me ask you a question right along those lines. In my talking to a lot of the other people in this series, power players in this series, they make the distinction between power play as an end in itself and as a means to something, like, a means to genital play. And in terms of your experience as professional dom and or sub, both in your private life and in your public life as a porn model, is porn more genitally focused? Is the BDSM, a means to an end, and that is, genital gratification as opposed to, just like, well, isn't she hung up really nicely there, strung up from the ceiling?
Every interaction that someone has, and again, it is widely varied for me as well. I am a hardcore bondage fetishist. To me, the means to the end is doing elaborate bondage and going through a scene that involves psychological play,
mm-hmm.
heavy bondage, and a release is not as important to me as it would be someone else.
Right.
However, for the eyes of the camera, sometimes that is important. But it's not something that I focus on.
Right.
For me, if I'm dominating a man on camera, his orgasm has very little to do with what we're doing.
Right.
We're going through an honest exchange of power.
Mm-hmm.
We're going through, again, I mentioned this again, trust,
mm-hmm.
emotional state, the physicality of being able to endure what it is that I'm giving to them to handle.
Right.
All of those things are much more fascinating to me and interesting to me than the orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
They can get that later when they're jerking off. sometime later that night or, you know, later that week. The orgasm is not important.
Right.
However, in a girl-girl scene, the sensuality and their enjoyment of the situation is just as important to
yes.
me.
Right.
So, from my point of view, I do not rate orgasms high on the scale of necessary to create a happy ending.
Right. Interesting and choice of words, happy ending. Right, good, good, good.
Yes. In the BDSM community, however, with the current advent of porn, it is necessary because it's become porn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not you're watching a BDSM video now, you're
right.
watching a hybrid of BDSM and sex.
So
the people, the clientele has changed. Those people that weren't originally interested in BDSM are not curious about it, but also want to see the mixture of BDSM play
right.
as well as a couple having sex or two girls going at it or, you know, femdom, male sub, all those things
right.
are, it expands the availability to a wider audience.
Right. And we oughtn't fool ourselves, you know, porn is porn and there, you know, there is expectation for that audience as opposed to a more purist BDSM audience.
I would agree, and the necessary means to market is a trend that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's necessarily good or bad for bondage as a whole. I believe that the bondage world will circumvent back more into bondage purism
right.
as time goes on.
Right.
I believe that it'll become segmented in its own genre.
Yeah.
Bondage sex will be something, bondage will be on its own, and of course sex will be on its own.
Right. Cool. So, since you have this very unique perspective, I want to plumb the depths here. You are comfortable both as dom and sub. Do you have a preference?
Fundamentally, I'm more submissive than anything else, and I believe that's largely due to my analytical nature.
Uh-huh.
I want to know why. I want to know how. And control is fascinating to me.
Right.
And I love the dynamics, but I would have to say that I would hand someone something first before asking someone to pick something up for me.
How interesting.
So by my human nature, I'm more service-oriented.
Yes. How interesting. So is there a particular high associated with each role? And can you distinguish those, you know, clearly?
Absolutely. Both the top and the bottom have moments of euphoria, flying
right.
high, you
right.
know, lots of things they can explain. Both top and bottoms also have drop from the experience as well when their energy is depleted.
Right.
How they recuperate that or catharsis out of that and recreate a comfortable, nice, safe structure for them to exist as.
Right. So you clearly get off on this, literally and figuratively, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be a physical orgasm.
Right, right, right. But, you know, getting off on something is not necessarily orgasmic, at least not from my way of looking at things. I get off on, you know, walking my dog, but, you know, I almost never have an orgasm when I'm doing that.
Yes, you could be in a puppy play.
Yes, that is so true. So let's talk a little bit about the role of endorphins and adrenaline in power play. Can you address that?
Yes. Endorphins and adrenaline are both an amazing and wonderful thing and both a very dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's amazing and wonderful about them is that you can be, without being too shishi-fufu, truly in touch with your humanity.
Mm-hmm.
When you're at the core of who you are as a submissive, you're at the core of your suffering or the core of your evolution or in an incredibly deep space from being encased long-term. It is a high like no other. It is comforting, enveloping, almost disassociative without being disassociative because that's an entirely different thing.
Right.
There are lots of words to describe it, but it's a place, it's a safe place of feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And for the top, it's a safe place of feeling good in that it's a stride of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, this is going, I'm so proud of them, or this is an amazing scene, this feels really good to me.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of more like energy vampires.
I'm doing a good job.
Yes, it's not.
Right.
Yes, exactly. It's not specifically object-oriented more than the high of the scene.
Right.
And what that can do for both the top and the bottom is make each of them push themselves harder than they would naturally.
Right.
And this is good because they can push back a barrier that they're trying to work through.
Right.
And that's not to say that all kink is therapeutic,
mm-hmm.
but some of it, you just are curious, what's through the looking glass? What's mm-hmm. Is it greener on the other side? What happens when I go to the next stage?
Mm-hmm.
Writing again that it's risk-aware consensual kink.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of these warnings in place, the dominant or the bottom can go too far by, of course, pushing themselves beyond what they're capable of doing,
right.
and the top can push the bottom or push themselves past a place of safeness.
Right.
And it's the ethical...
Or capacity.
Yes, it's the ethical right. responsibility of both to play and to keep as informed to one another as possible. There are many places that can be bad that someone can go, including tops, that they need support afterwards, which is why we talk about top drop or bottom drop as things that are necessary support structures for both the dominant and the bottom in any BDSM situation to support each other.
And the necessity for aftercare for both top and bottom.
Absolutely, and that's something that's not talking about commonly,
yes.
but it's highly prevalent and very important.
Yes.
If I go through a very intense 6 hours with someone taking them on a psychological journey, it takes a lot out of me.
Yes.
And it's very rewarding, but wherever they go, I have to go there with them.
Right.
And I am just as exhausted.
Goodness, yes. So in the past, I've been hesitant to ask more philosophical questions of some of the guests that I've had on this show because I didn't feel like they wanted to go there. But you clearly have thought a great deal about this. So I'm going to just jump in here and ask you this question. Do you suppose there is such a thing as a dom sub archetype? And if there is, where does that come from?
Well, there's dom sub archetypes as depicted in art
mm-hmm.
and erotica, and there are conventional, more stereotypical things as seen through, I don't know how you would describe this, through social demographics
right.
in a way.
Right.
Where you see the dom, male dom with a leather vest, leather pants, flogger on his hip, you know, looking a certain way, acting a particular style, having their slaves or subs behave in particular mannerisms that are commonly sought after in the community as pleasurable.
Right.
There are definite stereotypes for acceptable and non-acceptable behavior,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing, but it also makes it hard when people are slightly outside of the box.
Right. But you identified, or you dropped something just a little while ago in terms of your own preferences for being dom or sub, and you said that psychologically your makeup is more a submissive. Is there, to your mind, a breakdown in terms of human psychology that, or for people to be more dominant or more subservient, psychologically speaking?
To clarify, are you asking me that there is something inherent in them that would drive them to be one way or another?
Yes, generally speaking, yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I believe that it's the person's choice. I've seen
uh-huh.
people that I would view as inherently submissive and have chosen to become dominant due to either their life views. You know, you may not necessarily stereotype mm-hmm. them to be a dominant mm-hmm. person, but their desire brings it through to what mm-hmm. they choose to mm-hmm. experience. I believe that natural predisposition does have a certain play
yeah,
in what
right.
the outcome will be, but ultimately it is conscientious, direct decision-making on the person's behalf as
right.
to who they choose to be.
Right. And how much they want to stretch and develop, you know, a side of themselves. Like, if I'm right-handed, I mean, I suppose I could learn to become left-handed if I practiced. You know, or if I was proficient at the piano, you know, it would take some stretching, but I probably could become proficient as a violinist. But it takes some work, yes?
Everything takes work. Anything worth having is worth fighting for.
Huh. Do you suppose there's such a thing as a dom or sub pheromone? I mean, can you smell out, sense out, you know, what somebody is? Like if you're in a crowd or if you see somebody, can you either visualize like gaydar or whatever, you know, somebody being a top or bottom?
I don't know. My gaydar is pretty good considering, even though my primary partner is bio-male, I'm more homo than het.
Ah.
So I can spot dykes from a mile away, which is hot for me.
But, not just because of the plaid shirts either, I'll bet.
Yeah. Damon's like, what are you talking about? They're not gay. I'm like, go talk to them. But in the world of dominant submissive, it is largely, unless they're more public about their appearance and showing people visual clues about who they are as an individual, it comes down to much more based on conversation. You can look and see a banker versus a handyman versus a secretary, all these types of things that you can see based off behaviors, mannerisms. And yes, you could stereotype the dynamics of whether or not they're more of a giving person or a recipient.
Right.
But to understand whether or not someone is submissive, slave, bottom, dominant, top, owner, that requires more in-depth conversation.
Right. Interesting. I'm gathering that you play with both women and men. Yes?
Yes, I do. More with women.
Lucky them. Is it safe to assume then that you don't play with every Tom, Dick, or Mary who approaches you, even in your professional life? And if so, how do you discern between the ones that you encourage and the ones that you discourage?
Ethics.
Ah.
Is it ethical for me to take this person where they want to go? Are they an appropriate fit based off of my interests and their interests? Is it right, reasonable, or acceptable based off of the way that they choose to approach me to engage in a dynamic based of trust and emotion? If anything does not match my ethical standards, then it goes no further. It is that energy is meant for someone else.
Right. Interesting. And you're able to discern that in like an intake kind of thing with a prospective client?
It entirely depends. The ways that people communicate their interests are vast and varied.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot about people. And it's quite an interesting experience.
Right.
It's much easier to go further, I would say, with someone on camera.
Right.
Main reason being is that there's full disclosure at the beginning.
Right.
And they are already in a secure place. There's lots of questions and unanswered variables compared to different styles of play, even when you're meeting someone in a public dungeon to play.
Right. Who are your sexual heroes?
My sexual heroes. Nina Hartley gives the best head in the world.
Ah. So there you go, boys and girls. From
I
the
have
horse's
heroes.
Mouth.
Yes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
There you go, from the horse's mouth.
Yep, she does give the best head. And I think she's absolutely amazing. What I like and admire about Nina Hartley is not only her desire to become so as sexually proficient and practiced as she is,
mm-hmm.
she's an educator,
oh, yes.
she's very outgoing, very knowledgeable, and has a sincere desire to share what she knows with everyone.
Right.
There's no secrets.
Right.
And I very much appreciate about educators.
Right.
In the world of people at large, I am a big admirer of Bob Flanagan, whom
I don't know that name.
He had cystic fibrosis and died at the age of 43 by, of course, his lungs filled up with so much fluid he eventually drowned. But his attitude, persona, demeanor, his installation pieces are all things that I sincerely admire. Stellark is another artist in the world of hook suspension. And, of course, he's gone on to do other displays of amazing projects, but truly an amazing man. visual representation, of course, John Roy Bishop has been amazing. A lot of the Eastern riggers and American riggers, Lorelei from Bedroom Bondage, PD from Insects, Cersei, a former rigger at Insects, Phantom Bondage, he has a site in the UK, I've never met him, Ron DeMai, Nureki, many, many Asian riggers, people who are active in the community as well, Tristan Toramino, excellent on anal.
Right.
She's very, very proficient, as is Nina Hartley's partner, Ernest Green. I can keep on going.
Well, good
there's so many people to learn from, and there's so many people to share with that it's truly amazing that we have the communication methods that we do now.
I have one final question. I actually could go on and on, but I have to limit myself to this. And I'd like to turn our attention to the area of special interest to me as a therapist. And I often hear from kinksters and pervs, as well as your run-of-the-mill gay and lesbian folk, that they are often frustrated in their search for sex-positive and kink-positive healing and helping professionals. I suppose that you're equally attuned to this pressing concern, right?
It is hard, because it's hard to find someone that you can trust.
Right.
You're exposing a huge amount of vulnerability to someone. And I recently, for the first time, have gone through some very vulnerable and naive and embarrassing moments myself with the world of Tantra. I had read books on a lot of Enochian sex magic and lots of Tantra and things of that sort, but I'd never actually gone to the instructional classes. And I could tell you, I was never more embarrassed in my life doing something in a sexual environment as I was in the Tantra classes.
Oh my God, it's hard to picture, but yes, good, yes.
So vulnerability is there for everyone. So anyone that's listening, even us, you know, people who work in the sex industry and do our best to educate everyone, we do have our moments of vulnerability when trying to learn and be receptive to other things as well. One thing that I do in particular is I teach these things as well. I lecture and demonstrate and educate nationally. And I also educate for private couples who can't necessarily make it to events or want one-on-one time to fully understand where they want to go and what they want to do and what their options are. Mm-hmm. Education on a whole really depends on how you connect with the instructors, what type of knowledge you're looking for. San Francisco has an amazing amount of informational resources. Mm-hmm. There are many supportive BDSM communities and groups on the internet as well as in person.
Yeah.
The conventions are excellent because they have the top presenters from all over the United States presenting on a plethora of topics to where your head is spinning even as another presenter.
Right.
Just attending and watching everyone else's classes is an honor and amazing to see. But yes, there's a lot of information out there. It's hard to figure out what the correct information is, how to get that information. My best advice is to start, if you're someone that reads, start with some of the more classic books, Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, Different Loving, if you're interested in creating an MS relationship, Slavecraft, Extreme Space, the Topping book, the Bottoming book, Erotic Bondage Handbook, SM101, those are all wonderful places to start.
Mm-hmm.
On the internet, there's lots of informational groups. There are also social networking communities such as FetLife, where you can go on, be a member, start to talk with other people in the community, but also join their forums that are open-ended things where anyone can ask any question and they're supported by the community to help them seek whatever it is that they're looking for, because everyone ultimately wants everyone to succeed, learn more so everyone can have a better time, happier experiences, and fun. That's what this is all about.
And that brings us to the conclusion of our time together, which is one of the reasons why I'm so grateful that you have taken so much time with us, because this is really underscores your commitment to be an educator and an advocate, and our audience, myself included, is enormously grateful. But before we conclude, can you give us your website addresses again and walk us around a bit?
Okay. I have quite a few little things going on.
First,
First and foremost, I have my site where you can see me as a submissive doing crazy bondage stuff, which is clairebondage.com, clairebondage.com. Damon Pierce, also my partner, husband, owner of 6 years and amazing rigger on his own, has his site, slavetobondage.com, which is going to be launching shortly, which is him dominating lots of hot women with a lot of DSMS play and, of course, his signature bondage and corporal skills. We have a site together, which is vintagerope.com, where we sell Japanese jute, aka Japanese hemp, synthetic, cotton, all sorts of bondage scarves and books as well. For any of those listeners out there who are looking for educational books, we have them and are happy Great. To show you everything that we can offer you. And we have other projects coming up again soon, but that's for another interview, Dr. Dick.
Thank you, ma'am. It's
Thank
been
you.
Such a joy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I've had a wonderful time speaking with you, and I appreciate your very articulate and insightful questions.
Good, good, good. So until we meet again, we'll be seeing each other in cyberspace.
Absolutely. And take care. Hope you
Bye.
Guys enjoy our show. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad that you could join me. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys. If your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't, I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you'd just better call off the search right now. You sound like you're having a good time. Well, for all the other people out there, Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Not to worry. Take a look at my brand spanking new sex toy review site at drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. And look for the My Stockroom tab right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice and don't forget to subscribe. Feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.